morning, please be seated. All right, the first case on the panel's argument calendar this morning is Joseph Calabrese, I hope I pronounced that correctly, versus State, 67265. Mr. Drummond, you ready to go?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Your Honor, if I may reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Of course.
Your Honor, Craig Drummond on behalf of Mr. Calabrese. It's my honor to represent him in this case. There's a couple of key issues, and really I'm going to just talk about two of them unless Your Honor have any specific questions about others. The first is whether or not we get a new trial, whether or not Mr. Calabrese was entitled to the new trial. I will be the first to admit there's not really a lot of case law on this kind of point. The original decision from this court did reverse the judgment of conviction. It did reverse it and ordered that inquiry be made regarding the evidentiary hearing into the matter. The evidentiary hearing was held, and then we received a decision that unfortunately did not suppress any of the evidence, which brings us back here today. But if we do look at the one guidance we have is the 2008 case of Somi. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that correctly either. But that case is very similar in that the court looked at an evidentiary hearing, sent it back, and said must be suppressed in the new trial. And that's the guidance that we go with. So if it must be suppressed in the new trial, logic would dictate that we're going to have a new trial. Here we never had a new trial. And so based upon the Somi decision, being it's a 2008 case, it's not something from many, many years ago, we are arguing that we should be entitled to having a new trial. And Your Honors may be thinking, why is that important? Why is the defendant here saying that would have made some sort of a difference just because we had the hearing? Why should we also get the new trial? Well, it's very important because the hearing itself would have been an opportunity for the defendant to actually delve into some of these issues, some factual issues, done, sworn under oath, where we have the police officers testifying about certain facts of the case. That could have played a significant role in how the trial itself would have played out. Because this court previously said, yeah, should I have the hearing? We didn't have the hearing. Then we actually had it. We have new information being provided. That could have played a key role at the trial itself. So that's why we believe it's very important that Mr. Calabrese would have had the actual hearing and would have had the actual new trial, which was never afforded to him. Now, if we get into more of the merits of the case as far as the suppression of the cell phone evidence itself,
this are you advocating a rule that every time we order an evidentiary hearing on a motion to suppress, there should be a new trial? Is that your proposition legally that you're advancing?
If the court directs it. It's our position, as we tried to brief, again, given that there's not a lot of case law, Your Honor, on it, I think the court could have done other things. But because the court in this specific situation said the judgment of conviction is reversed, there would be a new trial. If the court in the future, or for example, in clarification of this case, wants to say no, when we reverse it, we're reversing it for the limited purpose of having a hearing, that's fine, and we obviously respect whatever Your Honor's decision is on that. But based on the current state of the law, based upon the language,
I understand. Yes.
That's what we're asking for. If we move forward, Your Honor, to the issue of the cell phone, there's a lot of arguments raised by the state about whether or not my client abandoned the cell phone. There is no evidence, zero evidence, that my client ever abandoned his cell phone. Unfortunately, my client is a crime victim. Someone burglared or burglarized his trailer, and he is a victim. His items were taken. Multiple items were taken. Prescriptions were taken. His driver's license was taken. Many items were taken. Many of those he reported to law enforcement, these items were taken. And then upon law enforcement, and essentially based upon another criminal investigation, beginning to research it, they find out that they have these other individuals, they have what they believe are stolen goods, they have the prescription bottles with my client's names on them, they have his driver's license with his name on them, they know he's the victim of a crime, they contact Henderson police, and my client, during the time that all these searches that we're talking about, the key search being the cell phone search, my client's on his way there. They know this. It's not abandoned. They know it, and they begin to just continually look through these pictures. And that's exactly what we have in this situation. They're continuing to look through them. There's pictures of my client. There's pictures of the crime victim in this case, being a young lady. There are all those pictures, but they're doing all of this knowing that they have stolen property related to my client, knowing that my client's on his way there. And that is the sole evidence used to convict him later. There is no abandonment. And if we look at the guidance from this court itself, which is the Taylor decision, the Taylor's thought talks about abandonment being expressed. My client never expressly abandoned anything. And if we look at the other case law that we have, that the district court heavily relied upon, which is the Sumlin case. In the Sumlin case, we're dealing with cocaine being in a lady's purse. When the police are called, she denies that it's her purse. Okay, got it. Maybe she's abandoning that purse. Maybe she has no real right in that property because she's abandoning it by telling law enforcement it's not hers. That's not this case at all.
So is your proposition that every time a police, like let's say they just found a purse on the ground, that they have to get a warrant to open it?
And Your Honor, I think that's a great question. No. But what I am advocating is a totality of the circumstances situation. For example, here, we know all the items that they have as far as names, driver's license, the prescription bottles. These are all my clients. And also, we don't have any information, and this is, I think, a key point, of when during the search did they determine that there were pictures of my client, which there were on the cell phone, that was testified to at the evidentiary hearing, and when there were pictures of this underage young female. The government has the burden in this situation. The police officer testified he had no idea the order which he was searching these items. For example, if during this, because they have the driver's license, because they know my client's the crime victim, he's on his way, if they come up with a picture of him, logic would tell us that's his, we need to stop.
Mr. Drummond.
Yes, Your Honor.
Are you saying that the finding made by the judge following the hearing, number 5. However, during the investigation, the officer discovered pill bottles and other property in the motel rooms that belonged to multiple people, suggesting these individuals were possible victims of robberies or burglaries. Is that finding of fact not accurate? My understanding of the facts and this finding is that there was multiple property, including pill bottles, belonging to multiple people. Is that not true?
Your Honor, I honestly...
I mean, you've represented that his name was the only name on all of this, but my understanding of the facts is quite a bit different.
My recollection is that the only names that we had, which was the driver's license and which was the pill bottles, were in fact Mr. Calabrese's. That issue was not briefed by either me or the state on it, so I don't want to misrepresent something to Your Honor. I would have to defer to
you. I'm relying on the findings made by the judge, and it doesn't seem to have been contested.
And I would defer to the record, Your Honor, on that issue, because I don't want to misrepresent something.
Well, I mean, it's quite a bit different, the factual circumstances, in making an assessment under the approach you're arguing, where the police are confronted with a scene that has multiple pieces of potential stolen property from various different parties, than a pile of stolen property that they know belongs to a single individual.
In Your Honor, I certainly respect the distinction that Your Honor is making. My recollection is that the only names that we're talking about on stolen property were Mr. Calabrese's. I believe there was actually some other property that nobody knew whose it was. But as far as the names on the property itself, my recollection is the only ones that we have. And I'm trying to think back because there were actually photos. And some of this was under a bed. And some
well, in any event, there was no name on the camera, and the camera was found in the car, so...
There was not, Your Honor. But what we also have, if we look at that scenario, is we have Mr. Calabrese on his way to identify the actual stolen items. And we have Mr. Calabrese, who reported a number of stolen items that they were finding at the scene, including the medication, including the driver's license.
But not the camera?
Not the camera. He did not. And my simple explanation for that would be that he didn't know all the items
right.
that had been stolen from him, which would go against the government's argument as far as abandonment, because he's not intentionally abandoning things that he doesn't even know were taken.
Well, is abandonment even necessary? I mean, if he'd have lost the camera in a park someplace, and someone finds the lost camera,
well, and isn't
that an example where someone can, if they can open it, they can scan a few photos to try to determine its ownership? So whether he abandoned it or he lost it or it was stolen from him, I'm not sure that's a really significant distinction.
Well, the distinction I would raise would be the investigatory distinction. Is he doing it for investigation, or is he doing it for identification? And here's where I think
don't we examine the officer's motive or intention with regard to opening the camera at that juncture, rather than the person who lost or abandoned or had the camera stolen from them?
And that's where, Your Honor, the most important part of this comes down to the evidentiary hearing, where the officer said he was not sure what order he looked at the photographs. For example, there were photographs of my client. Once he saw those, he had a duty then, I think, based upon the totality, to stop. The officer doesn't know. He said, I do not know what order I did this. Now, is that really that important? Sure, because the burden on all of this lies on the state. So the state is the one who has that burden to show that this was an identification search as opposed to an investigation search. So as soon as that officer sees the picture of my client, he has to stop. And we have no evidence that he did in this case. And given that the burden's on the state in this situation...
How does he know that the picture that he's looking at is the picture of the owner of the camera?
Because he's got the driver's license. Because he's got the driver's license, and they made it a point to call Henderson and say, hey, we have found these items. And they did good police work. They did. They figured out, hey, these items are part of another case. And so they do this investigation, and Mr. Calabrese's on his way. So they know exactly what he looks like because they have his driver's license in front of him. I believe if I could reserve the remaining amount of my time.
Sure, Mr. Cohen.
Thank you, Congress.
Ms. Lucich, how are you today?
Good morning. Good morning, Justices. Lisa Lucich on behalf of the state of Nevada. I was not only evidentiary hearing counsel, I was trial counsel, I was counsel that was involved in this case from the very beginning. The trial court did the correct thing ruling that the evidence should not be suppressed after the evidentiary hearing and in ruling that the judgment of conviction should be reinstated. In ruling that the judgment should be reinstated, the defense relies on SOMI to say that it shouldn't. And I respectfully disagree, because when you look at the order in SOMI, this court, when it reversed, it said because the record was insufficient to determine the constitutionality of the searches, we reverse the judgment of conviction and remand the matter for a new trial consistent with this opinion. On the other hand, in this particular case, what the court said was we order the judgment of conviction reversed and remand this matter to the district court for proceedings consistent with this order. In the order, this court only took issue with the fact that there was no evidentiary hearing to flush out the facts that the court relied on in making its ruling. If the court wanted a new trial, the court would have said so. And we know that because in the past, when the court wanted a new trial after an evidentiary hearing, the court actually said so in the SOMI case. There is no reason to have had a new trial after the court upheld the ruling of the evidentiary hearing, because no new facts arose as a result of the evidentiary hearing. Therefore, there was absolutely no reason to have a new trial. And when you look at the facts of the case, you can determine that the defendant actually had no reasonable expectation of privacy in this camera. He had no standing. He had abandoned the camera. While the defense claims that he didn't report the camera stolen because he didn't know what property was stolen, there is absolutely no evidence whatsoever to support that. When the defendant reported his property stolen, he was very specific about property that was stolen. He said that his $7,000 was stolen. He said that his laptop was stolen. He said that his driver's license was stolen. He described the pill bottles that were stolen. He described his Quest card, his medication card that was stolen. He described all of these coins. He had some silver coins. He described all of that property that was stolen. What's interesting is the only property that he did not describe that was stolen was his methamphetamine and the camera that had the child pornography on it.
And how important is that to your legal position that he have abandoned the camera?
When you say how important, I think that there are two different ways that we can get to the same decision. One of them
is... You don't
have
a finding from the district court of abandonment per se. The findings of fact don't say that.
I agree. I think that this court can still find that it was...
Sure, we could infer it, but legally I'm actually asking a different question, which is, let's assume that it was not abandoned but merely lost.
Which brings me to the reason for the Fourth Amendment. The Fourth Amendment bans unreasonable searches and seizures. The reason is to deter bad police behavior. The police did absolutely nothing wrong in this case. You have to look at the totality of the circumstances. On this particular date, on August 21st of 2006, the police were conducting an investigation at the Motel 6. There were two rooms that were registered to Rolando Ramos, and Aaron Stansel was there as well. Two rooms and a vehicle. And they contacted Mr. Ramos and said, can we search your vehicle? Can we search your rooms? He signed a consent to search, allowing them to search the rooms and the vehicle. In one of the rooms, they found Troy Mueller, a third felon, hiding under the bed. And in that room, they found a multitude of property all over the room and under the other bed. In that room, there was tons and tons of paperwork. There were pill bottles in the name of Joseph Calabrese. I do agree with that. There was clothing. There were...
Does the record support all this? There's always this point of confusion when you have trial counsel.
Yes, the record supports all of that. I mean, there was tons, and the unfortunate thing is that you don't get to see the pictures, but all over both of the rooms, there was tons of property. And then in the vehicle, there was a multitude of property as well. There was a bunch of clothing. There was the camcorder, the laptop, the digital camera. Mr. Calabrese's license was found in the room. It was not found in the vehicle. In the vehicle was the camcorder, the laptop, and the camera, as well as a bunch of clothing and other things. Now, when I talk about the totality of the circumstances, in addition to the robbery the day before of Mr. Calabrese, earlier in August, there was a robbery at a Winchell's. Detective Ryan Smith, who testified at the hearing, was investigating that case. And Troy Mulner and Aaron Stansel were the two that were the suspects, and in fact, there were warrants out for their arrest for that robbery. The clothing that was found in the trunk of the car, along with the camera, the laptop, and the other property, was a match for the description of the clothing in the Winchell's robbery. Additionally, Aaron Stansel and Troy Mulner admitted the fact that there was a bunch of stolen property there from other situations, and Aaron Stansel's ID was found in the glove box of the vehicle, and methamphetamine that he admitted was his was found in the console. So it was not only Mr. Calabrese's stolen property that was found within the two rooms and the vehicle. There was no way the police officers could have known before opening the camera whose camera it was. Even by looking in the camera, they still couldn't tell whose camera it was. But it was completely an effort to figure out whose property it was because there was so much property between the two rooms and the vehicle. Officer Bachman, who is the officer who looked through the camera first, said that the only reason he was doing it was to figure out whose property all of it was because in his experience, many years of experience, that when people commit robberies, They don't generally only commit one robbery. They sometimes commit many robberies, and they just kind of keep the property all together. From this robbery, all the properties together. Detective Smith, the robbery detective who was investigating the Winchell's robbery and was called out to this scene, testified to the same thing, that in his experience, people commit multiple robberies and kind of lump all the property together.
But so, let me ask you this. I understand your totality of the circumstances argument, I think, but let's kind of go to the hypothetical that Justice Hardesty offered, which is the police find a camera that was dropped in the bush in the park, maybe lost. And let's carry it one step further. They open it up, and the first thing they find are child pornography. Can they keep looking, or do they need to get a warrant at that point?
Well, in that example, it's just found in the park. I would suggest that it is abandoned. And yes, I would think that they can keep looking. Is the safer thing to get a warrant? Maybe, but there's no reason to because there's nobody there saying that's mine.
But they could be switching to trying to find out who the owner of the camera is that possessed the child pornography. I think that's Mr. Drummond's argument.
I mean, if it becomes an investigatory search, then maybe the better idea is to get a warrant. But as they're looking through, they didn't keep looking through the camera. They found pictures, and then they called out the ICAC, or the individual from Henderson, who handles that kind of thing. And this was a situation that took many hours. It's not like they found the camera, they found the pills, they found Mr. Calabrese's right. name, and all within a very short period of time, it was resolved. This took many, many hours. And they found the pictures of the child before they called Mr. Calabrese. They did not, and as I indicated, there were several different police officers. There were uniformed officers. There were detectives. There were lots of police officers out there. Some of them are searching in one room. Some of them are searching in the other room. Some of them are searching the trunk. So just because one officer may have seen a driver's license with Mr. Calabrese's picture on it doesn't mean that the individual who was looking in the trunk and looking in the camera knew that. I agree, Officer Bachman didn't know, did he see the picture of the defendant first, second, third, but once they saw the pictures of the child pornography, you know, they set the camera down, moved on, and
there is there anything in the record that says that even crediting that they saw the defendant's picture before they saw the child pornography pictures, that the defendant's picture was recognized as being Calabrese?
He said he absolutely did not know that it was Calabrese because the officer who was looking at the camera had not seen the driver's license that was in the room.
So there's actually affirmative testimony to that effect in the
yes.
record?
Yes.
You note at page 8 of your answering brief that even crediting that Riley's logic would apply, which is cameras or cell phones are the repository of a great deal of private data, and that's true. The police acted in good faith here, and Riley, I think, was a bit of a course change. Do you make an argument that even if there was a violation, the exclusionary rule should not apply because Riley postdated the search? Are you making that argument here?
My argument always was that it was a good faith action on behalf of the officers. Riley, like 8 years postdated the search. So back then there wasn't such repository of information
yeah.
as there is today. But even
Riley was the arrestee's camera or cell phone. So it's a different.
Correct. But I think that there's a difference between a digital camera from 2006 and a cell phone of today. A cell phone of today, there's so much more information that you can glean from it, you know, social security numbers, bank account information. So the bad things that you can do to people when you get that information is so exacerbated than it was back in 2006. Specifically the camera. The only thing that they could have gotten from the camera are photographs. They couldn't have gotten any other information that could harm an individual. But I'd argued from the very beginning, back when Judge Villani first made the ruling, that the officers acted in good faith because they all testified that all they were doing was trying to find out whose property it was, because there was so much property that was found between the two rooms and the vehicle. And remember that Aaron Stansel and Roland Ramos had said that everything in the vehicle is mine. Now, do you take the word of a felon? You know, not necessarily, but once the felon says, hey, that methamphetamine that's in the console is mine, if he's going to admit to that, then I think you kind of can take the word of them, at least at face value, that everything in the vehicle is theirs that they took. Therefore, they're trying to figure out who does it actually belong to. So the officers did act in good faith when they went through the camera. And there is no purpose behind the Fourth Amendment to suppress that. It was not bad police conduct. They didn't do anything that was wrong. And therefore, Judge Villani made the correct decision when he originally ruled that the evidence should not be suppressed. He made the correct decision when he ruled after the evidentiary hearing that the evidence should not be suppressed. And because the fact that he was not suppressing the evidence gives rise to no reason to have a new trial, especially since no new information was gleaned as a result of the evidentiary hearing, there was no reason to have a new trial. Why do you put a child through having to testify again when there is nothing to be gained by it? So unless the court has any further questions, I would ask the court to affirm the ruling of the trial court.
All right, thank you.
Your Honor, I took a look back at my original brief to try to address one factual issue that the court had raised. And on page 4 and 5, I outline and quote the appendix itself, that originally when the police officers were looking at this crime scene, there was an officer, Smith, and he testified at the evidentiary hearing that the items that they found, he thought were Mr. Calabrese's, and that is why Officer Smith then contacts Henderson and says, Henderson, come out, because we also know that these items are items that have been stolen from Mr. Calabrese, my client. Upon arriving, Officer Bachman with Henderson, at the time he turns on the power to this camera, at the time he does this, he knows the following. He knows that robbery suspects have been involved in the Henderson robbery involving Mr. Calabrese. He knew that the vehicle where the camera was located and the hotel room where the prescription bottles with Mr. Calabrese's name were all linked together. And he knew that Mr. Calabrese himself was on his way to the crime scene to identify the property. If we take those types of totality of the circumstances, Mr. Calabrese has an ownership interest in this property. The police just continue to turn it on, continue to look at everything on this camera, knowing that there's a high potential that it's Mr. Calabrese's. And that's where we have the Fourth Amendment violation, because they then use that information to put this man in prison, likely for the rest of his life, given his age.
So, Mr. Drummond, I'm sorry. So, Mr. Drummond, is it your position that it was unreasonable for the police to open the camera at all, or did they exceed what would have been a reasonable look when they saw a picture of the gentleman on there?
I'm going to argue both. One, given the fact that Mr. Calabrese is on his way, given the fact that my recollection of the record is the only names on items that we have are Mr. Calabrese's. Now, there was a lot of items there. I'm not going to stand up here and say that. But the only items with names on them were Mr. Calabrese's, and that's why Henderson was contacted. That's why Mr. Calabrese was here. Given that, they should not have started looking at the camera. But if we take it a step further and say, go ahead and turn it on, the question then becomes, once they realize that they have pictures on there that are directly the same picture of Mr. Calabrese, who they have his driver's license, they have to stop. Now, in this case, the officer doesn't know. He doesn't know the order in which he looked at these pictures. Now, whose burden is it? It's the state's. So if the state had a witness who says, yes, I stopped immediately upon seeing Mr. Calabrese, maybe I don't have such a good argument. But it's their burden, they don't have it. That's our position. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel, for your arguments and briefs in this matter. The case was